The following program is brought to you with limited commercial interruption.
Today's broadcast is being simulcast in broken English.
Welcome to the show that we're doing right now.
What the hell are we doing on this show?
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Let's go.
What is this?
Who else but
the Q?
It's showtime! Gentlemen, gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q. Of course, my name is Mark Bland. You're listening to the best current events, pop culture, and current affairs show east and west of that Mississippi River right there, hailing from the great city of St. Louis, Missouri, and worldwide on the internet at theqnow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Q, and this is a special one-hour edition of the Q. It's just me and Bobarito. Actually, on the weekends, it'll be two on the syndication, but for right now, live here on the air. Right. It's just a one-hour situation where we're going to kind of go in a little bit. We're going to discuss this whole Ferguson mess and what's been going on and what has come out and all of that. So sit back, strike up your bootstraps, because it's going to get exciting. So without any further ado, sitting here, shotgun with me, as he always does, we do not have Dan Walsh. Dan Walsh is not here, so there's nothing I can do about that. But I do have...
But Dan is okay.
Dan is okay, but I do have somebody else who's very special to me. He is the main man, the producer himself, Producer Bobby. How are you, Producer Bobby?
Doing good. Just got done with some family stuff.
Done with the family stuff.
Well, at least for today, but...
I got it.
Trying to keep my head down, head strong. I'm trying to make sure that things are okay with the family.
We hope everybody's having a great Thanksgiving, and this was not necessarily going to be done originally. This was a show. This one-hour special was only planned to happen if the Michael Brown verdict in a no true bill indictment discussion
was released.
That was the only time that this was going to happen whatsoever.
Right.
Beyond that, we were not going to do a show today because I just didn't have the team here. Everybody's off doing their thing for the holidays and stuff like that. But me and Bobby, being the men that we are, we love to make sure that you guys have fresh, great content to listen to every single week.
Being the journalistic professionals that we are.
Yes. Oh, by the way, I am in the middle of a, currently, as we speak, I am in the middle of getting barraged.
Of a Twitter war.
Twitter. I'm in a flame war, as they are trying to explain to me on Twitter. I am in the middle of a flame war with a gentleman who works for, I guess, a different organization, news organization here in the United States. He's got his own thing. Not a bad dude. Here's the funny thing. He's a liberal. Who is defending the protesters, similar to what I have done. You know, I tend to be more middle ground. I'm kind of a hybrid. You know, I pull from both sides. I grab for the best of both worlds, and I try to figure it all out. But basically, what it comes right down to is that this individual, who's I'm not going to even go out of my way to name this individual, but, you know, I had made a statement and tagged him in on some stuff with a mention, and he had noticed it. And he kind of took offense to what I had said. And then me and him kind of went back and forth. You know, it was me saying this, him saying that, just kind of back and forth, just having a jibber jab. And then all of a sudden, he's got lots of followers, just like I do. So they all kind of jumped in on top of me, piling in, because out of nowhere, there was just no reason. Right. You know, and the truth is that it all kind of died down after we went back and forth and all of his people dogpiled on me. And then I turned around out of nowhere, and I'll be the first one to go live here on the radio. You can like sound clip this, cut it out. I went out of my way. I was like, you know, he was a real big a-hole to me. Like, there was no reason for him to go to the level he did. I even tried to be amicable three or four different times in the conversation,
right?
But it didn't matter. So at a certain point, I was like, screw it. I went to his Twitter timeline. I just grabbed one of his tweets. It was a joke about Thanksgiving or turkeys or something like that. And I posted it on my stuff. And that was it. That was the end of that.
Right.
And so nobody said anything to me literally the rest of the day until just about an hour ago. Out of nowhere, man, they can't help themselves. He caught on that I took it. And like, all they're doing, like, here's the thing. Like, I don't even have a problem with this individual. Like, all the that's going on right now is they're grabbing my name. They're crapping on me left and right. They're giving me more relevance than I had prior to the conversation with them. Right. None of these people follow me. None of these people are my friends. None of these people knew about the Q. No, none of these people care about the Q. They don't know about our show. They just follow this guy over here.
Right.
And that's great. I'm glad that people have hardcore internet fan bases. But see, that's where it really is. It's kind of weird for me because I'm in the same book as this individual. You know what I'm saying? Like, I started off as a podcast. It got picked up by radio. I got the followers. Things started to kind of roll in a certain direction.
Right.
And before you know it, I was sitting in a pretty decent position and we got the cue where it's at today. Right. Okay. He did the same thing. He started his own network, you know, worked his way up just like I did, doing his own thing and building his thing up like it. And I don't even have an issue, but I did crack a joke basically talking about things getting handed to people. And I think that really added fuel to the fire.
Right.
But the truth is that I've always explained on this show, I'm an honest dude. I even invited him. I think he might be in town. I even invited him to come on the show. I asked him to come on the show and he refused. Which is fine. That's no problem. I mean, we're in the middle of an argument or disagreement. I figured he could sit right here next to us and he could like say to my face exactly what he thinks of me.
Right.
How big of a piece of crap he thinks I am. I know a lot of people out there think that I'm a piece of crap because I have an opinion. And now like all these people are like, oh, you're just stealing this and this and you're just stealing it. And it's like, yeah, but I have thousands upon that. Bobby, you're on Twitter with me. I have thousands of original tweets. Things that I put out all day long. Things that I say. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I retweet other people's stuff all the time. It's just Twitter. Like, that's just how that works.
Right.
But I specifically, I first to admit it, went out of my way to grab his tweet and throw it up there as my own. He caught on and now they're all really, really super angry with me. But that's fine. Like, I don't mind. It doesn't bother me. At the end of the day, he just does his thing and I just do my thing. And if we cross paths down the road at some point, it's probably going to be in a much different situation and a much larger format. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like
right.
Him on Bill Maher, me on Bill Maher, you know, type thing. So like, I'm not worried about it. And I don't have a problem with this individual either. So more power to him. And, you know, here's the thing. I'll be the first one to say, I'm really sorry to have taken your tweet and reposted it as my own stuff. I think that that's kind of horrible. But at the same point, you called me an a-hole. You called me the D word. You called me a lot of bad things. And so I think it's only fair. I can throw a punch and defend myself, too, if I want to.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
All right. There it is. Done. Well, anyway.
Ultimately, this right here is the reason that that we're doing our one-hour special.
After their exhaustive review of the evidence, the grand jury deliberated over 2 days, making their final decision. They determined that no probable cause exists to file any charge against Officer Wilson and returned a no true bill on each of the 5 indictments. The physical and scientific evidence examined by the grand jury, combined with the witness statements supported and substantiated by that physical evidence, tells the accurate and tragic story of what happened.
So there it is. That is St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney Robert McCullough giving the no true bill at the press conference on Monday evening. Now, here's the biggest thing I have a problem with, and I didn't know that this is why Michael Brown's family was asking for him to be removed from the situation and all of that, is because of the fact that apparently McCullough's father, who was a police officer as well, was killed by an African-American man back in the 50s, I think it was, they said. And so they felt that he was prejudiced against the fact that it was a African American that was killed by a white police officer, that they felt that he was not going to be able to treat the situation fairly. So that is just absolutely ludicrous to me. But prosecuting attorney Robert McCullough giving the information about the Michael Brown case.
On August 9th, Michael Brown was shot and killed by police officer Darren Wilson. Within minutes, various accounts of the incident began appearing on social media, accounts filled with speculation and little, if any, solid, accurate information. Almost immediately, neighbors began gathering and anger began growing because of the various descriptions of what had happened and because of the underlying tension between the police department and a significant part of the neighborhood. As a caution to those in and out of the media who will pounce on a single sentence or a single witness and decide what should have happened in this case based on that tiny bit of information. The duty of the grand jury is to separate fact from fiction. It is important to note here that they are the only people who have heard and examined every witness and every piece of evidence.
Now, I've read through, they gave out a packet with all of the witness testimonies and everything that had to do with the grand jury's decision, everything, every piece of evidence that they possibly could. I've read through quite a bit of it. And I've here's the thing. We've had this discussion before. The first thing I'm going to say is, it was the worst kept secret in the United States of America. I've said it on the queue multiple times. Okay.
Oh, the no true?
Well, no. First off, there probably wasn't going to be an indictment charge against Darren Wilson whatsoever. There wasn't a single situation with any news service or any company. There wasn't like a local news person who is like, I know everybody else is saying this, but I think they're going to indict him. I think it's going to go down like he's going to get indicted, and I think it's going to happen. That like anybody who was opinionated, like gave an opinion,
right.
Everybody was pretty much, we got to prepare for what's going on. We need rules of engagement. We need everything that is leading to a bad situation. That's what we need.
Right.
And the bad situation will be predicated on the idea that Darren Wilson is not indicted.
Right.
Straight up. Now, yeah. A no true bill, technically, however you want to play with the words, the syntax, not guilty, no indictment, not going to happen. Just he's nothing that he can be a charged with. Now,
at least at the state level.
Now, I disagree with a couple of things here.
Okay.
Based off of some of the things I read in the witness testimony and all the different individuals that testified in front of the grand jury. Okay. I do feel that maybe he got off a little too clean. I do feel that there might have been a potential opportunity to maybe hit him with a lesser charge, something lower on the bill, not something that's the death penalty or anything like that, but something where he definitely, because I feel based off of what I've read, there have been a lot of accounts that have backed him up. There have been a few accounts that have backed up Michael Brown's side of it, but it's all led off of the fact that Michael Brown started it with the fist fight. And right. At no point, his argument is very simply, I felt this guy was huge. When he grabbed me, it felt like he was the size of Hulk Hogan versus me, who's a smaller guy. So therefore, I didn't know if any more punches were going to kill me type thing. The other thing is that he doesn't carry a taser. He admits full well in there that he never carries a taser. Are they available? Yes, they are available. But he doesn't like them because they seem to be uncomfortable on his fit when he's wearing it. So did he have the ability to maybe have a taser and Michael Brown to not get shot and killed? Yes. He does have to play with what he's got on him at the time. But I think it's one of those things
and
where...
And he said that he had a can of mace on him, but he wasn't able to get to it because of the positioning that Michael Brown, after the fighting, Michael Brown had put him in. He couldn't get to it.
So I asked the question, why not the Billy Club? You know what I'm saying? Or something like that, sitting on the seat next to him, maybe?
But
to where
he
could grab
sitting on a seat.
I know, but why not put it on the seat? Just in general. I got it. We're just going to speculate about 1,000 different things that could have happened that day, but didn't. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I understand. So, what? I am not 100% just sullied with the idea that our friend Darren Wilson is just this glowing angel.
Well, I don't think he's a glowing angel, but I think he was doing his job. He, a police officer's job is to serve and protect the community. Well, the community that he was in, Ferguson Meat Market or Ferguson Liquor, whatever it's called, is part of that community. He was serving that business, which had just been robbed by a gentleman. And he happened to be going to a non-emergency situation where he just happened to roll up on these two kids, Mike Brown, Dorian Johnson, and he recalled and they recalled the description over the radio of what the suspects look like. They fit the one suspect fit Michael Brown's description. Now, he also saw the cigarillos in Mike Brown's hand, which is what was stolen from the Ferguson liquor store. So everything points to Michael Brown, you know, absolutely being and the video shows that Michael Brown was guilty of committing a crime, and the crime he committed, absolutely death, was not, you know, the sentence, but Now you've assaulted a police officer and you've endangered someone's life and you've put someone fearing for their life. And when they have no other obstacle or they have no other way of defending themselves except for to fire a warning round, and when they fire that, you are still charging at them now. I mean, yeah, I agree that Michael Brown shouldn't have been killed, but this guy was doing his job. And that's the problem I have with everyone, you know, throwing a fit about the fact that you know, Darren Wilson got off. Darren Wilson did his job. He was serving and protecting that community. We don't know what could have happened after, because Michael Brown has already committed a crime. We don't know what he was going to do. They found in the autopsies that Michael Brown had marijuana in his system as well, which is an illegal substance.
All right. Now, with this situation, when the information came down,
right,
we went nuts. St. Louis literally went bonkers. Now, like, literally, while he was reading it, everything was fine. And for about 10 to 15 minutes after the reading of the verdict, everything was kosher. But then within a few minutes, you know, of the verdict being read, within that 10 to 15 right. minute window after the verdict was read, groups of people basically were like, well, we're done standing here listening to it. And they moved in mass about 1,500 deep down South Florissant Road, and eventually got to a cop car where at that moment, Barack Obama is live on the TV. On all the stations and all the news channels have him split screened with what's the video from Ferguson looking like right now and Barack Obama talking at the White House. And basically in the middle of him saying, we don't want people. I'm sorry. That's not a voice. I got a little frog in my throat. Actually, I haven't been feeling amazing.
I don't want
No, stop.
People of Ferguson.
No, basically that's what he said. He didn't want the people of Ferguson to riot. He didn't want anybody to break out any windows or destroy right. anything. And as he's saying those exact words, they're flipping the police car over 25 deep, getting it off the ground and flipping it over. Eventually, it was set on fire. Lots and lots of different areas that Bobby himself grew up in specifically. We both are from that area. I'm from Florissant.
But he's from Ferguson. These are the places that I walk through,
oh, yeah.
drove through every day.
These are the parts of our nostalgia, our right, childhood right. growing up and living around that area up there, places that we had been to, January Wabash Park.
Specifically, one of the places that was burned down, I lived in. I worked at the public storage there in Ferguson.
Oh, did you?
And
I did not know that.
I lived on that property. There's an apartment there, and I lived on that property.
Yeah. And that's what it was crazy about the situation. Now, we understand that people were going to be angry. We knew it because they had been waiting for 3 months for this situation, and they had been literally laying out for about a month and a half straight all of these plans of what's going to happen when the indictment comes down, how they're going to be prepared for what's going to happen. Well, that's just telling me that they kind of already are planning for the worst.
Right.
Of course, better safe than sorry, but they went buck wild as far as the protesters and everybody who was down in that area that night during the initial announcement.
Right.
They burned a lot of buildings. A lot of places got vandalized. It was 3 to 4 times as worse as the original time when they burned the Quick Trip down.
Now, I don't know if you've heard this, but this is just some of the police audio from that night.
What do you got there, Bobby?
National Guard shots fired. Deputy shout and save. Number 49 North Florissant. 200 protesters on the lot wearing masks. There are 10 employees inside of the store.
231. There are a large group of looters at the Family Dollar West Florissant and Ferguson.
So this is just some of the situation. I was actually driving home from a family member's house at this time, and I've got the police scanner on because, you know, the non-indictment has just come down, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and I'm hearing, you know, this information, and then I'm also hearing that they've gotten into Walgreens at South Florissant Road, and they decided that they're going to try and burn the building down.
Yes.
And people are now trying to say that these buildings were not set on fire by looters or rioters.
They're feeling it was an inside job.
That professional people came in to burn these buildings down for the business owners so they could collect the insurance money.
Okay. Everybody saw it on video. They literally watched the Molotov cocktails flying through the air in multiple locations, not saying that they specifically caught the fire going on or getting lit at all these specific spots we're talking about. But, like, literally, they were thrown, like, on the second night, which is just the other day. Like, this happened on Monday night is when it originally came down. On Tuesday night.
Right.
Right after about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, or it might have been like 10 o'clock. They were at City Hall. Everybody was standing out in front. All of a sudden,
we
a bunch of people
trying or push the car over.
Once again, they ran down towards City Hall, away from the fire department or police department.
Right.
They got to another police cruiser. They flipped that one, rolled it back over, and then like three or four Molotov cocktails bounce off the car, hit the car, and are laying on the ground. Like, it's obvious where it's coming from.
They showed on Monday night when they lit the cars on fire in the buy here, pay here lot. They showed the people. So the news reporters were in the air and caught them busting the window out and getting into the vehicles. So you can't say that it's an inside job. These people were there. They were there to do damage, and they were trying to do damage. Now, one thing I will say is, I found out that of the 65 people that were arrested on Monday evening, all of them except for five were actually from Ferguson this time. There were not people coming from outside of the city of Ferguson getting in there. It wasn't any of that information. So these people are destroying their own community now.
Yep.
But they're getting frustrated and they're getting mad because communities or businesses don't want to go into the city of Ferguson. Quick Trip has already said they're not rebuilding in Ferguson. These public storage, the O'Reilly's Auto Part, AutoZone, Walgreens, these places aren't going to come back. Why would they come back to a place that has been destroyed?
I went out of my way in the middle of my Twitter war, by the way, to hashtag Day of Healing, because an individual in this town who's a friend really wanted to get this idea out there and get it into the hands of a lot of different people who are tweeting and like social media in general and stuff like that. I even handed this off to said individual in my Twitter war and said, hey, listen, instead of us arguing about this, how about you retweet this and help the situation out? Be a part of the solution as a part of the problem, because right now you have a lot of individuals in this town, especially protesters, that are not happy with the mainstream media. They are not happy with the people down there in Ferguson, with your MSNBCs and who are guests on MSNBC, your CNNs and your larger networks. They're not happy with the way those people are acting towards the hometown individuals and some of the undercurrent bloggers. Now, we've gone to toe on this show talking about bloggers not being real journalists and stuff like that. But at this point, it's kind of a chaotic situation. I think everybody needs to have cooler heads prevail. So hashtag Day of Healing is what I was trying to push. Listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break here on the queue. When we come back, we're going to discuss more about this Michael Brown situation, more about Ferguson and the riots that are happening over this past week because of the announcement and all that stuff. So we will be back on the queue right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, Mark Bland, special 1 hour edition of the queue. A little Linkin Park to bring you back. Producer Bobby sitting here with me. What's up? In a state of emergency. We are in the middle of a state of emergency. The National Guard is in town, hundreds deep. People are swarming the streets of St. Louis as we speak. And unfortunately, it's over the fact that a young man was gunned down and killed. And it's sad that that happened.
Have you heard about the other story that happened this past weekend in Cleveland?
The 12-year-old?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's really an interesting situation. I heard something really weird and odd earlier today when I was tooling around on my Twitters, where I'm fake and I'm just being fake and always lying to everybody and stealing stuff because that's the kind of guy I am. You know what I'm saying?
On my Twitters.
All busy on the Twitters all day long. You know what I'm saying? Just tap, 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 tap.
I don't know how to Google.
Yeah. Anyway, somebody had said something about... The 12th. I don't know how true this is. I might have to do a little bit more research, but
I have the story.
Supposedly somebody said that this kid had some like background in being nefarious, and that's a claim that they're making now.
I haven't heard that, but several hundred people.
And I'm like, he's 12.
But several hundred people marched down an exit ramp and temporarily blocked rush hour traffic on a busy freeway on Tuesday while protesting an officer's fatal shooting of a 12-year-old boy who had brandished a realistic-looking novelty gun. Police diverted traffic but didn't take action against the protesters who chanted the phrases hands up, don't shoot, and no justice, no peace, as they sat in a major intersection before marching past the city hall.
First off, let me say this as a, and by the way, don't forget, we are presented by photo.com. That is FOTO.com, photo.com. That's photo with an F. 75 free 4x6 prints, all those Thanksgiving pictures that you just took and all that good stuff that's coming up. You can get them free.
Right.
Go to photo.com, FOTO.com, and get signed up with them for those 75 free. Now, to get back into this, I feel horrible that a 12-year-old child was killed. I don't care. Like, and that's a weird situation. That's a horrible situation right there, you know?
Yeah.
Because we tell our kids, you can play with this, and you can play with that, and you can touch this, and you can touch that. You know what I'm saying?
Sounds
you
like a song.
You can't touch these things over here. This is daddy's gun.
Right.
This is daddy's car. This is daddy's lawnmower. These are bad. Right. Like, you're not old enough to do this. At 12 years old, this kid has already lived 12 years of his life. He's been told the things he can and he can't touch multiple times.
Right.
And unfortunately, in this case, something that he probably was told he could touch because it was toy, you know?
Well, it says that the protesters were demonstrating after the death of Tamir Rice.
Yep.
Who was shot Saturday when police responded to a 911 call about a gun at a playground. Police later determined that Tamir had an airsoft gun, which typically shoots tiny plastic pellets, but it was missing the orange safety indicator. Now, I have seen the video of the officers responding to the playground where he was at, and it, not only does the gun not have the little orange indicator, there's a guy in the background who he's the one who actually calls the police. And if you watch, Tamir, as other people are walking past prior to this person in the background calling 911, Tamir has the little toy gun out and he's waving it at people and like pointing it and making it look like it's a real gun. So for the officers,
and this is the video, right?
This is in the video. This is in the video that's released, the surveillance video that is showing. It's on a building across the street from the playground.
Okay.
It shows the playground, and you can see all this unfold. And you can absolutely see when the police pull up, it looks like he pulls this out. Now the officers don't know if it's real or not. They don't know if they're getting ready to be shot at, so they defend themselves.
Does he do it? And I haven't seen the video.
In the video, he's like waving
it. Does he pull it out towards them?
He's at the time, you don't know, but it looks like he just pulls it out.
Right.
But he's got it in like.
He's got it set up the way a person would have it in their waistband.
At the end of Gran Torino.
Yeah.
You know how Clint Eastwood reaches in his jacket and he pulls out, it's the lighter?
Yeah.
It was that type of motion. He's got it in his jacket and he pulls it out and all they can see is that it's a gun.
Right.
So, but earlier in the video, you see him and he's got this waving it around and he's like, as people are walking up close to him and like towards him, he's doing the same thing. He's like pulling it out like towards them.
Oh, and show it like he's like pointing at them.
Now, but there's no indicator that shows that it's a fake gun.
Do we have the audio of this? Because are the cops asking him to put the weapon down?
There's no audio in the video.
See, and that's the problem. We don't know if the officers ask him to put the weapon down. You know what I'm saying? They might have seen him pull it out, assume right off the bat, boom, this is a real gun. They don't even ask. They just draw their own. And at the same point, he's 12. I don't know, man. There's so many of these inconsistencies. There's so many of these very wishy-washy situations that are like potentially very harmful to the way they set up for the discussion in the world of social media and the world around.
Now, I'm trying to find the other article because, you know, everyone always asks the question, well, what if it's the opposite way around? What if it's a white male that is unarmed that is killed by an African-American police officer. Well, there is a situation in North Carolina where this has happened. A African-American, and it was actually just a week ago, an African-American police officer that was a campus police officer, and now I can't find the complete story, but the African-American police officer pulled a gun on a white unarmed male who, in this video, again, there's no audio, so we don't know what is being said or you know, spoken between the two people.
Yes.
But come to find out, what the situation was is he's a college student. He took LSD, and he freaked out. Well, he went to the police station. He banged on the police station, you know, window and everything.
Sure.
And as the officer came out, you can see in the video, the kid puts his arms out, like I'm showing you right now, like this.
Like I'm
arms out.
I got nothing in my palm. Yeah.
Plus, the kid is completely naked.
Oh, there's that too.
He's completely naked, and he actually, at one point in the video, gets down on his knees. The officer doesn't say anything. He's just pointing the gun at him still. So the kid stands back up, and he starts backing to the officer. The officer still doesn't say anything, and as the kid turns around, the officer fires one round into his chest, and it kills him.
That's odd. So, see, and that's when you have that story right there, right?
Right.
That shows that the officer is not thinking correctly.
Correct.
This guy is buck naked. If he had a gun or he was a threat and, like, a very dangerous... Now, we've had Dan Walsh on the show. We've had talks with Dan Walsh about situations where the meth heads... They can be,
yeah, they can be out of control. Out there, yeah.
They can be out of control, and they can be hard to stop.
Right.
And if the officer feels that this, but here's the thing. I understand that there are officers that are rogue, and I understand there are officers that are racist, and there are officers that do bad things.
Oh, and this officer, by the way, was also not indicted.
Okay. I understand these things exist, but not every single officer in every single situation is using it as a racial motivation or some type of cleaning the streets of the bad guys situation. In most cases, they come up on a situation that's already in the middle of happening.
Well, absolutely.
Literally. The Darren Wilson one, that's a unique case where the interaction was started by the officer to try to get the situation down.
Well, Darren even, you know, spoke with George Stephanopoulos, and one of the questions that Stephanopoulos asked him was, it was race a factor in this situation?
After the supervisor got there, I gave him the brief rundown of what had happened.
What'd you tell him?
I told him that I had to shoot somebody. And he asked me why. I said, well, he had grabbed my gun, and he had charged me, and he was going to kill me.
Is there anything you could have done differently that would have prevented that killing from taking place?
No.
Nothing?
No.
And you're absolutely convinced that if Michael Brown were white, this would have gone down in exactly the same way?
Yes.
No question?
No question.
Something you think that will always haunt you?
I don't think it's a haunting. It's always going to be something that happened.
You have a very clean conscience.
The reason I have a clean conscience is because I know I did my job right.
And that's fine. Like, I don't have a problem with Darren Wilson feeling that he did his job right. The clean conscience completely, I do kind of find that a little fickle.
Right.
I feel like the it'll never bother me, I'll never think about it type thing. Like, dude, your entire city you grew up in is going nuts.
Right.
Because of the situation you were in.
You'll never actually be able to lead a somewhat normal to your existence life because of this situation.
You'll never be able to literally walk down the streets of St. Louis again without people knowing exactly what you look like.
I wouldn't say that,
or
because
not.
He walked into a courthouse, got a marriage license in October. Not a peep was said, not a person noticed.
Sure, yeah, I get that. But I feel that he had protection with him. Like, I think it was a situation where they handled it properly. Like,
yeah, but if he had protection, it would have caused an even bigger stir.
No. Like, 2 to 3 people that are like, you know, like Secret Service style, where there's like a guy over here like 30 feet away, there's a person over here, but they're just kind of shadowing him. That's how I feel that, like, you're taking, like, he's got this surround of, like, circular bodyguards like he's the president.
Well, when you say security, that's the way I thought.
Come on, man.
He's Diddy, and he's got people around
him. No, he's not Diddy. Now, here's the thing. One of the things that was impressive, and she has since gone on record to apologize technically for this, was Michael Brown's mother.
Okay.
And when the verdict originally came down on Monday night.
Right.
She originally, remember, they had put out videos multiple videos. We do not condone this violence. We do not condone this rioting. We do not want you guys to burn things. We don't want you to break things. We don't want you. We want this to have meant something. And by you doing that, you take away the value of what it is and you kind of crap on it.
Right.
That's literally what she was saying, and Michael Brown's father was saying, as well as the father-in-law. Then the minute the verdict comes down, it wasn't Michael Brown's mom directly. It was Michael Brown's stepfather who is getting things whispered into his ear by many different people. And don't get me wrong. I understand Michael Brown's stepfather, mother, and father are all very connected to this individual. They have every right to be extremely angry and disheartened by the fact that this decision was made. But like when the father-in-law decides to go out of his way and say, we need to burn this bitch down, or whatever it was he said to that effect. He screamed it out loud. That's what's crazy.
I've been here my whole life. I ain't never had to go through nothing like this.
This is
so
his
none
mom.
Of y'all know me, but I don't do nothing to nobody. Anybody say so, they a lie. Call me.
That was somebody's child. Y'all burned my
And it's just out of control. Like, I'm just telling you, ladies and gentlemen, like, I understand that anger. That mother has every right to be angry because she has bled her heart and soul out to the world because of this situation with her son dying. And right. She is a mom. She's a mom. I'm a dad. You're a dad, Bobby. If one of our children was killed, whether it was by accident or by complete dishonesty or whatever the reason was, we would be horribly, like, even if they got ran over by our own car, like we just made a mistake and ran our own kid over, which I've actually heard that story before, where a father ran over his own baby.
Stephen Curtis Chapman, who's a Christian artist, his son didn't know that their sister was behind him and accidentally ran her over and killed her.
Yeah, and that's horrible. But like, that every parent is going to be distraught. Like, that's just how it is.
Right.
At the same point, it's because of what Robert McCullough said. I don't think that Robert, you know, you talked about the Robert McCullough thing earlier. You talked about the fact that his father was shot by a black man back in the 40s, 50s, or 60s. Somewhere.
I think it was in the 50s.
In the 50s, and he was killed. And he's never brought an indictment against a police officer or a police individual ever. A law enforcement individual ever.
Right.
And so, like, there is this idea that the game is stacked. And I can see why people would think the game is stacked. This is a situation where maybe they needed to get an outside prosecutor to handle the case. Bring one in, bring the prosecutor from the city of Chicago down. Or bring one up from Tennessee, from Nashville, Tennessee. Or bring in the guy from Kansas City, or what, like someone else at the same level to handle this. And then if they came back with the exact same thing, there's really no argument.
But why? This man is elected by the people of the county of St. Louis. No one chose to run opposed to him. So why should we bring someone else in? That then takes Michael Brown and makes him a martyr. That is not the case. He is a normal person who had a situation happen to him, and it just happened to cause a race riot and war, basically. So it should not, that should absolutely not happen, because he's no different than anyone else. His mom may say different than that, but Michael Brown is no different than anyone else, so there should absolutely not be anything else. Now, one thing I will tell you that I found very interesting, right after the verdict was read, Kevin Hart went to Twitter. And Kevin Hart, this is exactly 3 minutes after the verdict happened. Kevin Hart said, and I quote, "Not all cops are bad, not all black people are criminals, and not all white people are racist. Stop labeling. It's 2014. We need to be equal."
And that's my point. My point exactly that we've gone in on this show for three solid months about is very, very simple. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not 1865. It's not 1961. It's not a time period in history. Listen, I said this on the show, I think it was last week or the week before. Bobby, let me ask you a question. Do you like slavery?
No.
Are you a fan of slavery?
No.
You a big fan of it? You like tell people about slavery? Do you pontificate it to the masses?
I don't.
Do you jump on the Twitters while you're stealing things like me and tell everybody that slavery is a good thing? No,
I
don't.
I don't steal.
You don't. I did. I totally did. And I admitted it. I'm sorry. But no, here's the thing. At those time periods in history, those things like calling a black person or calling minorities out and calling them derogatory names was commonplace in 1960.
Right.
You could go into a diner and the lady behind the counter could say the N-word to a black person in the South, in the North, like in a lot of places. I wouldn't say necessarily in the North, but basically through the South and throughout the Midwest and all that like that. And nobody in there would blink an eye. Now, the black person might take offense to that, but at that time period, they had heard it 1,000 times. They didn't like it, but it was commonplace. It didn't make the white lady who said it right or whoever said it to them right.
Right.
But at that time period, it was considered commonplace. If you walked into a Denny's in 2014 and you just literally walked into one and you saw a couple of black people sitting at a table or some other minorities and you said a very derogatory thing out loud in front of everybody, everybody would turn around and look. Why? Because that's not the makeup of our society in 2014.
Right, right.
We don't think slavery's cool. We don't think calling people derogatory names is good. We are a different people. So to sit there and think that there's this burgeoning racism that is just out of control and trying to knock people down is ridiculous. Kevin Hart's right.
Absolutely.
Not all cops are good. Not all white people aren't racist.
Right.
Like, absolutely. You know, everything Kevin Hart said, the opposite is just as true. So we need to stop trying to, as he said, label and tag everybody in these things, these beliefs and these ideas. All it's doing is destroying people. And then you have, through this Twitter situation I was talking to you about, you know, this individual happens to be a black male. He's got a lot of people that are now coming down on top of me who also are black males. Fine, so be it. I never said anything racist to the individual. It's all about taking his tweet and using it without his permission. That's the whole situation. But I've already had in this Twitter war at least 15 to 20, maybe 30 different derogatory attacks towards me. All it does is make me go, oh, here's this person. I don't know nothing about them, but I do know that according to their picture, they're black. This is their name, and this is what they think of me. That's it.
Right.
I'm not going to sit there and judge the entire culture of black people or minorities against one little thing like that. But at the same point, I am not going to like sit back and go, well, they're okay to just do that. They can do that. Those people, everybody, whoever it is, it doesn't matter who it is, can just do those things. I can do those things. Bobby can do those things. Dan can do those things. This Twitter guy that can do these things. No, that's not true. There's a little bit of couth.
Right.
That needs to be adhered to.
The New Yorker, the magazine, The New Yorker, they've just posted their cover for this new issue for December 8th.
Sure.
And it is a picture of the St. Louis Arch broken in half. Literally, they have like the top section where the windows would be broken apart. And it's racially divided. They have it set up black and white. And this is where I have a lot of problems, too, is a lot of the media takes this situation and really, really pushes the black white, because I don't think people realize, if you look at the protesters, it's not just black protesters against white police officers or black police officer against white people. There's a mix in this situation, and that's the problem with it, is they're trying to separate it as it's a black versus white situation, where in some aspects it is, but then in some aspects it's also not. The other thing, too, I don't know if you've heard this, Mark, but there was a 20-year-old man named DeAndre Joshua. He was found shot and killed not too far from where Michael Brown's body was laying in the street in Canfield. Well, apparently, Mr. DeAndre Joshua was one of the key witnesses in the testimonies that were pro Darren Wilson. And now they're saying that some of these people are the new Black Panther Party are going after the people that were pro Darren Wilson in their witness statements before the grand jury.
Interesting. Did not hear about that.
Yeah.
So I just found that information. I mean, I heard about the individual being killed, but like I didn't know the backstory.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. It's been, well, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, before we get out of here on this special edition of The Q. And like I said, I want to make sure that I say happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. I want to make sure that I say happy Thanksgiving to the owners and the people at 1380thex.com, as well as 1380thex, the station here in St. Louis that we're on, 1420 WINI, and all the individuals around the world that are celebrating Thanksgiving this year. I want you to have a peaceful, I want you to have a happy, I want you to just hug your kids, hug your moms and dads. Love them as much as you possibly can. Eat as much pie as you can. That's fine, too.
Pie.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. But, you know, we in the St. Louis area, although we're hoping things get calmed down, like people, smarter heads prevail across the board on all this stuff.
We'll see what happens on Friday because they're announcing stuff's going to happen on Black Friday.
But I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I hope everything went well. Because, you know, when I say Thanksgiving, I consider this entire weekend. Like, Black Friday, all of it. You know, the
Cyber Monday.
Small Business Saturday. That whole four-day period is kind of like that kickoff to Christmas and Thanksgiving time.
Right.
You know, and everybody gets together. There's a specific day for Thanksgiving, but everybody gets together. But regardless of that, I want to say, hey, St. Louis, I want you to say peaceful. Day of Healing, hashtag Day of Healing on Twitter. As well as you can follow me on Twitter if you want to, at Mark Bland, MarkBland, or CC Papa, SISIPOPPA. You can follow us. You can retweet us. You can talk to us. I might steal your tweets. That's fine. That's cool. You can steal mine, too. I'll never cry about it if somebody takes my tweet.
You can even give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 347-947-0958.
And don't forget, thank you to photo.com. That's FOTO.com, the presenting sponsor of The Q every single week at theqnow.com. You can get 75 free 4x6 prints. Black Friday sale coming up. Go to photo.com, FOTO.com. They have that on there, as well as throughout the holiday season, they're going to be running specials for photo books and everything else they do. So I want to make sure that you guys know about that.
And make sure you guys check out theqnow.com. Starting on Monday, we're going to have some pretty cool giveaways starting Monday for you guys.
We're going to try to do that. So anyway, it's time to go, man. We've got to get out of here, bro. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on The Q, the special discussion of the Michael Brown situation. Be safe out there. Take care. Bobby, anything you want to say before we out?
Just be safe. Let cooler heads prevail, and don't do anything stupid, man. We love St. Louis. Hashtag I love Ferguson.
There it is. We'll see you guys next time on the show.